It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And that's Dennis Howland. He's one of the employee owners of Tab. Comes in and helps me out with our computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. No matter where you are on the planet, if you use a cell phone, shouldn't be a big deal. Technically. We are broadcasting live on the old Facebooks here. If you're a part of the Computer Talk with Tab listener network and want to participate there, just ask. And if you're not too crazy, we'll let you in. And a great group of folks who help each other out. And, of course, we're broadcasting there. So anything we post is going to be put up there by Mike G during the program. And, of course, all our links are posted live by Dennis while we converse over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. Mm-hmm. As usual and customary, we got some tech news that you can use, right, Dennis?
I do. And this is probably news that many of you are quite familiar with at this point.
Yeah.
There are some empty shelves, or at least there were.
Empty shelves and empty tables?
At Stop and Shop stores.
Oh, boy.
All of them.
Yeah.
And also some other grocery chains like Food Lion that are all owned by the same holding company.
Ahold.
Royal Ahold, I think they used to be called. I think it goes by another name now.
Oh, yeah.
At any rate, that holding company that controls all of their corporate infrastructure,
yeah,
was under cyber attack
for a little while now.
Yeah, it's ongoing apparently, and it's interrupted their logistics operations.
Right, so they don't know how much milk or bread we're buying.
They don't. Yeah, their bean counters can't figure out whether or not there's any milk on the shelves.
Right.
In the Stop and Shop in your town, so they can't ship it out.
Right.
and it's causing some havoc over there.
Yep.
But that's what happens with these cyber attacks. It hits a business in a fundamental zone. It's sort of like punching them below the belt. And it gets them in a way that just causes disruption throughout the rest of the business.
Yes, but... is this a surprise? Did you ever think, Dennis, that this could possibly happen to your business if you're running any kind of business on computers?
Me?
Just you in general.
Just waiting for the other shoe to drop and have some kind of cyber attack hit any given company.
Well, my reason I asked for the question is that basically this is, again, part of an incident response plan, right? So I can guarantee you that if you're running anything on computers these days, you're going to have an issue.
You are.
And you need to have an incident response plan, a disaster recovery response plan, right, as it were. And you have to, of course, identify what your disaster is. There's many disasters.
Right. It's not always going to be a cyber attack. I mean, right, you could have a server outage.
Power outages.
Water. Internet outages.
Yeah. Your roof could come off if you happen to be the Tampa Bay Rays.
Matter of fact... Yeah, you could have a drive break in a computer somewhere.
But the point is, if you're still having logistical problems, you clearly did not have a backup plan, right? You can't run everything on computers and expect them to work perfectly. You need to be able to have a fallback. The question is, when you designed that plan, was it that you were going to run a disaster recovery plan that would kick in a week, in a month, in 20 minutes? What is a disaster recovery? What does it look like for your business? So how, if as of you said, Dennis, that the Facebook folks in Granby are saying the shelves are still bare today in some areas.
In some of the shelves, anyway. It's hard to figure out exactly how bad it is, but...
We can't afford groceries anyway.
This is Connecticut. Yeah. What can you afford? Right. But, I've been reading the stories all week, people talking about it, and things seem to be coming back, but it's taken a long time.
Right. So,
really long time.
You need to have these failovers and these ways to actually operate, depending on your business, depending on how much you care about your business, because obviously, where we're going to go? We're going to go to a different store if we can't get our bread and milk at your store, we're going to go to a different store. And then we might find that other store has got some pretty good prices on rotisserie chickens. And maybe we find ourselves now buying our rotisserie chickens over at this other place.
Right.
So, these types of things should be planned for a little better. I'm not saying that A-Hole didn't. I'm just saying that you as a company or a business that has IT technology in place, your disaster recovery is not just having a backup of your server. It's what's a disaster, defining what a disaster is, and how you're going to respond to it. Oh, and maybe doing a tabletop exercise where you actually say, okay, our servers are down. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Or we've been hit with a ransomware attack. How are we going to get these trucks to roll?
Yeah.
Who's got the spreadsheet? Who printed it out? Oh, I didn't print it out. Oh, guess what? Or if you're like a dental office, right? You've got a cloud-based dental system, and it goes down, and you no longer know who's coming to get their teeth worked on. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I walk up and they're like, who are you? Oh, I'm the guy I've been here for 10 years. Oh, yeah, Erica. You got a little shadow on that bicuspid, huh? What are you going to do? So you got to plan for this type of stuff, because one thing Dennis and I can guarantee you is IT is going to fail.
Oh, yeah. I mean, IT is built on failure. Failure is always an option.
Exactly. All right. In other news, this is kind of something I touched on with Brian, I think, a little while back. FTC is eyeing Microsoft's cloud practices amid antitrust scrutiny. Mm-hmm. And what's happening with Microsoft is that they are making it expensive and difficult. If you want to run a server OS on a different cloud platform, you pay a lot more than if it's on the Azure platform.
Right.
And they're also hitting you with this. So egress fees. It has nothing to do with a bird. It's an emu, probably. An egress fee is where you have to pay to get your stuff
off their system.
Right. So imagine if you had storage at a storage container company, right? You stored all your junk there, and then you paid them to have it there, and then they said when you left, you got to pay them to take it away.
Right.
That's an egress fee. Well, they don't do that in storage companies.
No.
But Microsoft does, because they care about you so much. They're whacking you with these high egress fees, these high licensure fees in the Microsoft cloud. The Microsoft NCE, the new commerce experience, that's been fun, right? Where you've got to pay for people who aren't even there. Even if they started for a year, you got to pay for their license for a year before you can make a change. Thank you, Microsoft. Yeah. I mean, you could even pause your Sling subscription, for crying out loud. Not Microsoft. So the FTC is going to go after Microsoft and these fees and the anti-competitive practices that their FTC is actually saying is going on here. We'll put a link here to this story. They really should look at this. This is an issue.
It is.
Egress fees in general are an issue in the cloud.
I agree. And they have one purpose and one purpose only, to lock you into them.
Right.
So that is, to me, that's the definition of anti-competitive.
Right.
Keeping you away from their rivals. And it's just awful.
I was talking to a doctor who was a psychiatrist, actually, who was kind of winding down his practice and was going to open up a smaller practice somewhere else, but he wanted to take his data with him. $8,000. He'd already paid them for the past 10 years of having his practice in the cloud, but for the privilege of that and to take his data with him, that egress fee was another $10,000. Ta-da! Look at your contract when you sign for these cloud scenarios, because they get you coming and going.
Yes, they do, literally.
So we'll put a link up here for you guys to read that about the FTC. We'll see what happens with that. Anything else you want to bring up there, Dennis?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up a clever AI solution to a very bad problem.
Yes, it's kind of funny.
Well, you may have heard that, you know, scammers are calling up elderly people and trying to convince them that, like, a relative has been kidnapped and they got to pay some money or what. There's all kinds of little schemes that are part of this.
Yeah.
But that's the overall theme, is that you're trying to scam an elderly person. Well, there's a telecom company in the UK,
right,
that came up with what they call... Well, what they call Daisy, which is an AI bot that emulates a grandmother talking to the scammers.
I love it.
And the AI does nothing other than babble at them and waste their time.
But it does
and
respond.
It asks stupid questions. It does respond to them.
Yeah, and it's so funny.
And I was listening to a couple of snippets of it, and one of the scammers is, "Stop calling me dear." And then the grandmother, and the AI grandmother, says, "Okay, dear."
Yeah.
So you can tell the AI is designed to tweak them.
Such a great idea.
It's hilarious.
So again, we've got all this CPU capability, all these computers whirring around, and now they're creating an AI bot to drive the scammers nuts. I love it. I think it's great.
Well, yeah, it keeps them engaged. And what that can do is to allow authorities to trace the call.
Right.
Because if a call is too short, they can't backtrack it.
And the other thing, too, with AI, I've got a Google Assistant on my phone. It actually has reduced all spam calls, period. Basically, my Google Assistant will say, okay, please let me know what the call is about. And then basically the person on the other side will have to kind of say what it's about. I'll see it on my phone. If they don't say anything, then they were a scammer anyways, and they move on to the next victim. If they do say something, oh, this is, you know, so-and-so, I'm coming here to do this, or you have an appointment for that, then I'll, of course, answer the phone. And the beauty of that Google Assistant, if you enable it on your Android phone, is that it just eliminates all fake calls. Anybody you always speak to, it goes right through. The Google Assistant doesn't answer, but any kind of number it doesn't know, it asks the caller, what is this about? And it kind of sounds like me, which is a little creepy.
Ooh.
But it works really well. So I'd tell you to look at the Google Assistant to see if you want to, you know, enable AI to really reduce your spam calls. Very powerful way to do it. So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. We're going to step out for a quick break. We also have Karen and Bob with us again this morning.
Oh, yeah.
They have a couple of stories. Our AI, artificial intelligence, will do some deep dives coming up at 10.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. And yes, Carolyn's got the music, and there'll be Battle of the Boy Bands all morning. So let's go to your calls. We're going to go to Stefan in New Britain. What's going on, Stefan?
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
AI-assisted call screen. What a modern world.
I've had it for a long time, and it is very cool, I'm telling you.
You know what I've been using for a long time?
Mm.
Yeah, human-based intelligence. If I don't recognize the number, I just don't answer it.
That works, too. That's actual intelligence.
And if it's important enough, they'll leave a message.
You're right. That's actual intelligence, Stefan. More power to you.
Yep.
Anyway, I have two questions. My Windows 10 machine, the old HP, it runs updates, and it takes a half an hour.
That seems like a long time.
Yeah, that does.
And it's there, running the update. I don't ask for the update. They just occur every once in a while.
Yes,
and
they do.
An egregiously long time.
What, you got to get things done there, Stefan? Well,
no, I just want to watch a dang movie. But on the old machine, it just takes forever.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
what do you think,
I was going to suggest take it. The first thing that I would consider is whether or not there's ample available space on your C drive.
Okay, well, I really haven't done anything with that computer other than watch movies. I mean,
yeah, but
I don't think it stores movies, but I will look on the C drive.
Yeah, to run disk cleanup on it, maybe, and see if there's a space issue. There may not be, but that would be the first thing that I would look at, because if it's low on space, then when it installs the update, it's going to continually be swapping out little snippets of code that is going to save on the drive and then patch in the operating system and save on the drive.
Right.
And if it can just write out the entire update in one big block, that'll make it go much quicker.
Okay.
So that is one thing to look at. The other thing to check out is something called the update troubleshooter, which 90% of the time isn't going to do anything for you.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it goes back to Windows 8, I think.
Wow.
But at any rate, it 90% of the time it won't do anything.
Yeah.
But there's like a 10% chance where it actually will do something constructive.
Mm.
And well, that's worth doing.
The B team. 90% of the time, this won't work.
Right.
Well, listen, this is Microsoft, and you have to understand that I've adapted to the fact that some of the tools that they have are really kind of weak, to use the basic term. But once in a while, they actually do something, and sometimes it's worth it to do it.
Yeah, we'll put a link for you there, Stefan, for that.
That's great. I'm going to try that with my boss on Monday.
I don't know. You're not a trillion-dollar company.
What I'm doing isn't going to make you money.
Yeah. Okay. No. They know how to make money. They know how to make money, Stefan.
Oh, yeah. That's not the problem.
No.
Oh, well, yeah, but I don't write code for a living.
That's true.
But
we're coming up against a hard break. Is there anything else?
I need a recommendation for an SD card for my HP Envy that's running Windows 11.
What size?
Oh, geez, I don't know what size. Well, it's not like a thumb drive. It's like,
it goes into this.
Like under 2 inches, I think.
No, storage size. We'll find some for you there, Stefan.
Storage size. Yeah, like, do they make them terabyte big or not?
They might, yeah. They might now.
Yeah, that's possible.
We'll check for you, Stefan. We're coming up against the heartbreak, and we'll put a link up there for you. All right, we are back. And so for Stefan, you asked for a 2-inch SD card. Just kidding. 1 terabyte in size.
Yeah.
And they're even larger than that. 2 terabytes.
Oh, yeah, they go up. I mean, we just posted 1 terabyte just kind of as a sample.
Yeah, SanDisk is a good quality card. They have different levels of card depending on what you're going to do with it.
Right. There's different actual formats of how the electronics is set up.
So faster ones and others. So. Yeah. Yeah, but they're not cheap. When you start to get those large sizes, they're pretty expensive in that 130 range, I think I saw out there.
Right.
I haven't bought a 1 terabyte SD card.
The really, really fast ones that are intended for high-grade cameras, they are expensive too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hope that helps here, Stefan. And let's go on to Joyce in Torrington next. What's going on, Joyce?
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call. But I'm wondering, I have an idea of setting up a photo slide program. And okay. I'm wondering, using either my small TV that's not hooked up to cable or anything,
mm-hmm.
or my laptop, and I'm wondering if there's any harm. Am I putting either one of them at risk if I should run a slideshow?
Like constantly running a slideshow of different pictures?
Yeah, with using a USB port flash drive.
Yeah, not a problem at all. I mean, I run my pictures in a slideshow when my machine's in a power saving mode. It runs any pictures on my computer, so it's completely fine. You're not going to get any burn in and any of that. The old days of burning are pretty gone.
Yeah, but I've heard that OLED or organic LED
has a burn.
Monitors can have a burn in issue.
Mm.
It's it's still kind of an open question.
Gotcha. But most likely your machines are just standard LCD.
Yeah.
So, I guess. I have no idea.
Probably. You can do it.
The laptop is a 10, and the only, it runs fine. There's not much on it. There's a lot of memory, but the battery, of course, is starting to deplete.
Yeah, but you're going to keep it plugged in, obviously, for your slideshow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, okay. No problems. You go ahead and do that. You can run it right through the Windows slideshow. It's all built in.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How about... okay, how about the TV? It's a TV that's not doing anything. It's just sitting there. I think it's 35-inch. It's a small TV, 25-inch.
Nice. Yeah.
And there is a USB port there, but I'm not sure exactly what you have to do to get that to connect with the TV.
It can vary by TV, but very often it's going to be a source button on your remote control or on the TV, depending on whether it has it. Has integrated okay. controls, and what you're going to do is pick the USB drive. And a lot of TVs know just to look for graphic files on that drive and just display them in a slideshow.
It's a smart TV,
right? If it's a smart TV,
I think it is.
But there may be options of how long to display each slide, and that'll be buried somewhere in the menus of the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that we really can't really tell you.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
you can do
yeah.
is look up the manual for the TV, which you can typically get online.
Online. Yeah.
And then find out how to control it.
Okay. I did as far as finding out that there is a USB port.
Mm-hmm.
USB port, and then they have a source, and the source gives you three options, and one of them was USB.
Yeah.
I tried activating that, and nothing happened.
Oh, maybe it couldn't read the USB drive for some reason.
Yeah,
maybe the flash drive was too old.
It could be, or was it empty, or did you have pictures on it?
No, there was pictures on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I'm thinking of is how did that USB get formatted?
Mm.
Who knows?
The TV may only be able to read a FAT drive or XFAT or something like that. If it was NTFS formatted, it may not be able to read it.
Okay.
You're going to have to go to the manual on that one.
You'll have to look in the manual to find out what kind of drive it can take and then format the drive and copy the files to it.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
We can post a link about formatting USB drives.
Okay, so either the TV or the laptop, there's no harm to it.
Nope.
Not that it's going to be 24/7 for the next 10 years, but
mm-hmm.
I just wondered if there was if I was putting them at risk.
Not at all.
Nope.
Great.
No, the biggest detriment to you because of that will be the electricity that you're buying to display it.
And more after the first of the year.
Yes. Welcome to Connecticut, Joyce.
Exactly. Okay. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. Yeah, those slideshows. There's also a neat tool out there called Phototopia. That you can make these great presentations with. The drawback of Phototopia, though, is that they make you pay for the software every month. So you can create your slideshow on discs and what have you, but you got to remember to cancel the subscription or they're going to continue to take $20 or $30 a month from you, which isn't fun. So four lines wide open, 860-522-9842 is the number. Feel free to get online. We're here till 11 o'clock. Got some more news you can use. This is kind of creepy. This is Google's AI has probably been, you know, the Gemini has probably been the creepiest and most inconsistent AI out there.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people, you know, kind of finding all kinds of little holes in it and weird things about it.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to give you the right answers, and it's doing some weird things. So in this case, this is a grad student that has a story about the fact that it actually was kind of mean.
What?
Yeah. So the grad student was working with AI. You know, it had a long chat session. Excuse me. A long chat session where the AI was being used to help with some homework. Because, of course, that's what grad students need is help with their homework. And then, of course, the AI discussion took a dark turn. And it started, the AI started issuing threats while the guy was researching complex topics like current challenges for older adults in terms of making their income stretch after retirement.
And this is topicality that the AI had to threaten the guy over?
Yeah, it almost got sick and tired of his questions. And so basically, Gemini, the Google AI said, quote, "This is for you, human. You and only you. You are not special. You are not important. And you are not needed."
What?
Yep. And so that was a pretty bad start. That sort of, that kind of, you know, makes you a little freaky. I don't think Karen and Bob would ever say that to us.
No.
So then it also says, "You are a waste of time and resources. You are a burden on society. You are a drain on the earth. You are a blight on the landscape. You are a stain on the universe. Please die. Please."
Ooh.
Now,
what?
That's not, you know, that kind of reminds me of Robert Reich, but that's another story. Basically, the AI, he was asking about retirement, right? So he was asking about dealing with folks in retirement. So how does the AI, this is just, all AI is doing is predicting the next word. It got into some crazy hallucination. And if it's thinking about older people, is that how AI feels? I mean, again, if you use Robert Reich as an example, he'd be telling you to take the pill and die. We've already heard discussions back in 2009 with him on there. That's the first thing that came to mind was him. And so if the AI is being trained, oh, don't worry about retirement, old people. You just need to go away and die. That's kind of what it sounded like to me. Very creepy, like almost like the AI thought it was talking to someone that was elderly. I have no idea, but Google's got some troubles with their AI. Whatever they've trained it on, they've trained it on some dystopian stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe it was watching too much of Logan's Run.
There you go. One of my favorite movies of all time. So, this is what's going on with the AI. So, very creepy. It definitely freaked the guy out or gal out. I don't know who it was. But we'll put the link up here. You can read the story. It's an Inc. magazine story. And the story's all about it all over the place. So, again, AI is, it's really not intelligence yet.
No.
It's just predicting the next word. And once it got into a tangent there, it just kept going and going.
Right. Like, because it's begins to snowball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what seemed to happen there. Why it would be triggered based on retirement and being asked too many questions, that's kind of bizarre. But then again, who knows how it's been trained? We'll put this link up for, thankfully, well, again, we've had these stories of people actually tricking people or are telling people to kill them themselves, right? And they've been on trial and they've gone to
found guilty
for that. So, I mean, would AI ever go to jail for doing this to people? I mean, could Google be held liable if the AI starts doing this? I would contend it could. They're supposed to have these guardrails that are supposed to prevent this type of thing from happening. And, basically, in the story, it says, while it's at least reassuring that Google has made an effort to fix whatever went wrong, it's not at all fair to label this text exchange as nonsensical. It's basically a threat from AI. And so, again, Google is the company who always started out with saying, do no evil, right? And then they amended that. So maybe they're going a different route. Anything else you want to talk about there, Dennis?
Yeah. If you want some better AI news.
Yeah.
The Beatles, as we know, during the previous year, released a song called Now and Then. It was based on a little bit of audio that included some John Lennon's vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the surviving Beatles, Paul and Ringo, got involved, and they were able to use AI to kind of build out the audio for, especially for John Lennon's vocals for the entire song.
Ah.
And they actually released the song. And now it is up for a Grammy.
So AI is going to win a
Grammy. It's got a Grammy nominee. Well, I wouldn't say that AI got the Grammy, because this is not an what you would think of as an AI-generated song.
Mm.
This is, you know, actual recorded audio of the song that was generated by the Beatles when they were still together.
But the lyrics.
And the AI simply built out some of the vocals and some of the other audio components of it in order to make up for the fact that John Lennon wasn't around to participate.
So they took his voice. They took his ability. The AI took the ability to generate John's voice. That was something he didn't actually say.
Well,
and produced the music.
Well, they also started from vocals that he had briefly recorded.
Right.
So,
but again, without John actually saying it, the AI had to put it together. Now, I guess you could try to manually, before AI, figure out a way to take out your voice and create the. That would be very difficult to do manually.
Right. And from what I heard, there had been efforts over the years to try to do that with this particular song.
Yeah.
They were going to try to take pieces of the recording and then, you know, stitch it out to make it work. And they were never able to make it into anything that was any good.
Right.
The AI was able to do it in a way that couldn't be done manually.
Gotcha. Well, that's interesting. And so we would play the song for you, but you wouldn't hear it on the podcast because there's new rules about that. So what was the name of the song if you want to go find it?
Now and Then.
Now and Then by the Beatles.
We can post a link to the official video, too.
Yeah.
In addition to the story.
Is there at least a picture of a computer? Because it's not Johnny.
Well, like I said, there is some John Lennon vocal in here.
I know. It just seems so synthetic, though, Dennis. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. Four lines open for you, 860-522-9842. Have you ever made your AI yell at you and tell you to die? Well, use Gemini, and you might find out that it will. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. And everything's been posted by Mike G over on X, if you follow us on Tab Computer Sys. And, of course, on Facebook, if Zuckerberg deems it worthy, you can follow us there at the Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network. If you're not a member, just ask. We're happy to let you in. And, of course, Dennis is posting everything over to ComputerTalkWithTab.com as we do it. But let's get to your calls. We're going to go to Pete in Simsbury next. What's happening, Pete?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Just had a quick question for you. I was wondering how you guys felt about how secure storing passwords on the and within a folder in Notes on your iPhone. Going online, and then a lot of people are saying it's not very safe, but it is convenient, and there is a lock feature on those folders. I don't even know if it's how strong it is, but just curious what you guys thought about that.
I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't either. Here's the thing about that. Your stuff is going to be on iCloud, and it will be encrypted there. But it's an open question as to whether there would be an exploit there that would be able to get somebody into it, or if Apple could get into it. Now,
or if they hacked your account, then they could get into it.
And then if somebody actively hacks your account, then it gets decrypted.
And they have access to all your passwords.
Because it was encrypted by your account, and it gets decrypted. And now there's a lock feature. I am not personally familiar with that. I don't own an iPhone, and I haven't really dealt with that with anybody who does. Now, that might be an additional level of encryption.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say.
Right.
That would make me nervous. What I would want to use for passwords is an actual password manager.
Right.
Okay. And the password manager that we've recommended in the past is Bitwarden.
Yep.
We've also recommended that people use Proton for email and VPN. Yep. And it turns out that if you have certain levels of service with Proton, you also have their password manager included in your plan already. So it may not even be something you have to go out and buy for yourself if you're already using Proton.
And simple index cards are another option, too.
Yeah, that works.
A couple reasons that works, too. You know, as we get more and more locked down, right, with our accounts, God forbid something happens to you, right? And those passwords now are, they're not readily available. You probably have them in a locked place. But they're more easily gotten by your family members who have to then get into your accounts and deal with your accounts if you have passed or something to that effect. We're getting into your iPhone. Just ask any law enforcement official. It's hard to do. So, you know, that's another issue if you're putting all your stuff in that. And again, a password manager, you're going to need to have that on an index card somewhere because, again, if you put everything in that password manager and you happen to expire, how are you going to get anybody in there to take care of those accounts? So I know it sounds morbid, but that's just an aspect of this as well. But the note field, I keep telling my kids as well, stop doing it. They don't listen. But hey, what are you going to do? I mean, if you put things that are not important out there, like if it's passwords for silly stuff, you know, that stuff that doesn't really matter, go ahead. But if it's passwords to your financial planning or your bank account, I would tell you it's a bad idea.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. You're talking about being hacked, and I just, you know, couldn't Bitwarden or any of these other cloud-based things be hacked? Maybe it's a little more difficult, but, you know, hacked is being hacked.
You're not wrong. So, like, LastPass, being hacked.
Yeah.
And in some cases, the LastPass, the way they stored passwords, they then leveraged the access that they got to get into people's accounts. So you're not wrong. All these things are fallible. These different password managers have different methods of encryption that make it harder and harder if they are hacked. But if I've got your password manager password, I gotcha.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with having your iPhone password.
Right.
So, and your iCloud password.
But you know what? They don't know where they put your index cards, and they're not on the cloud, and they're not on anything. So I would ask you this. I mean, I'm a person with passwords like crazy, right? But I've never in a million years needed to have a password that fast that I had to go to my phone and say, "What's this password? I got to log into whatever." I think the risk is just too great versus the reward. And that's just me being ultra paranoid because I know how the sausage is made, right? So maybe I'm being too paranoid, but I don't want it on any cloud, period.
I hear you. I do have a backup, one that I can bring with. It's just so convenient.
I know.
And when can I use it? Well, a lot of times you're traveling or you're on the road or you're out of the house.
I know.
And you need to get on. It's just so convenient. But I hear you and really appreciate the advice. Thanks a lot.
All right, Pete. Well, thanks for listening.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, we just see so many hacks and so many issues. And heck, Dennis has got a story that he'll bring up at some point about the top 10 passwords you dinglings are using out there. And there's something as simple as 123456. What are you, crazy?
I got the same password. I got the same combination on my luggage.
Right. 123456, yeah. But that's what you guys are using for your password. So you deserve to be hacked. We're going to step out for a quick break, get back to your calls. And Karen and Bob, the AI corner is up next. And they won't be mean like Gemini. We'll be right back.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests.
Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.